You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show on this Monday, July 25th, the feast day of St. James, Apostle and Martyr. My pleasure to be with you. Next hour, we're going to be talking to a guest, Dr. Ann Maloney. She's a professor at St. Catherine's University in St. Paul, Minnesota, but also an author and a columnist. And she wrote a piece in Crisis Magazine I really liked, in which she talked about teaching the faith in a time of crisis. And she was talking primarily about, you ever see that movie back, I think it was maybe from the early 80s, horror flick, suspense film, When a Stranger Calls. I think it had a young Carol Kane in it, I believe, about a babysitter, and she's being tormented by threatening phone calls, and then they call her from the phone company to tell her that the calls are coming from inside the house. It was pretty creepy back in the day, but I digress. Anyway, Ann Maloney talking about how, you know, we talk so often about some of the difficulties in our culture. As I've said before, that's not to extol some sort of alleged golden age in which the culture was thoroughly Christian, but to say, because every generation has its blind spots, but to say that in some issues, for sure, there has been a complete upheaval in terms of any sort of common consensus about certain moral values that we're seeing erode so tremendously, and not just among the marginal believers, but even among the most ardent, it seems like, of Catholic families, we're seeing this crisis occur. The crisis is in the house, seeps in through the culture, and of course through our own sinful nature. And Ann Maloney talking very honestly about that, and how we can respond in the midst of that. As you might expect, despair and hand-wringing, not an option. Though we are tempted to often do it, no doubt. Also, why the apostles' embarrassment should be our comfort. Why Mike Pence's journey is common but unnecessary. And really not talking so much from the politics angle, but his journey regarding Catholicism and evangelicalism. We'll talk about that and how Hillary Clinton's running mate, Tim Kaine, stands in the shadow of Mario Cuomo. All that and more in the program today. We'll have the question of the day in the next segment. We'll spin up that Dollar Catechism wheel, and we'll look back in history and give our What Were You Thinking awards, all coming on the show today. Hope you had a great weekend. I spent the weekend in the Palmetto State in lovely South Carolina. My mother and her husband, my dad died back in 87. I've shared before, and my mom remarried about 3.5 years later. Back in 96, she and her husband, Don, moved to from Kentucky, their native Kentucky, to a retirement golf community, beautiful place, right there in McCormick County, which is on the border of South Carolina and Georgia, and they lived there for 20 years. So they're getting ready to, if they can get their house sold, they're going to be full-time RVers. Going to be enjoying retirement by parking their RV various places around the country. So I thought we would go. I went with a couple of my kids to go visit them for the weekend. I would get in to visit before they sell their house and get out of it. Had an excellent time. It actually inspired my question of the day, which you'll find out about in the next segment. So 7-hour drive down on Friday, 7-hour drive back yesterday. And so I'm a little pooped today. Got to go to Mass in McCormick, South Carolina. Not a lot of Catholics in McCormick County, South Carolina. The whole state of South Carolina is one diocese, by the way. But the thing is, I always find so to be true with the Mass, wherever you celebrate it, it's amazing how it's the same. You know, I mean, yeah, there are differences in the way they sang the responses, tunes I did not recognize. So that was a little awkward. or as my daughter say, Aukusquawk. But other than that, beautiful Mass experience. And after Mass yesterday, got to eat some Bojangles, which is a Carolina staple. Unfortunately, not many Bojangles in Kentucky. One recently just outside of Lexington opened up. I'll have to check that out. But, oh man, I was back remembering my days of living in Myrtle Beach. Heaven, Cajun chicken, biscuit, mashed potatoes, and gravy. Oh, yeah. Anyway, I'll be paying for that, though, I'm sure. 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to be on the program today. 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. As I said, today, the feast day of St. James, Apostle and Martyr. Now, I was thinking about, you know, we talked last Friday, how last Friday was the first time that we celebrated the feast of St. Mary Magdalene. Now, we tend to throw that word feast around a lot in the Catholic Church, but as I said, and this was something that I finally kind of got clarified in my own understanding, that there are really three levels of feasts in the Catholic Church. There is a solemnity, which is the highest level of feast that you can have, and a solemnity always involves three readings in terms of liturgically, always involves the creed and involves the Gloria, the glory to God in the highest. Then one notch below that, you've got the feast. And the feast is typically, it is for very significant saints, particularly apostles, biblical figures, and so forth throughout the history of the church. And feasts tend to have the Gloria, but not the creed, and two readings. And then you got a memorial. And sometimes it's an optional memorial, sometimes it's not, but a memorial, you've got the regular two readings or whatever, but a special prayer on that day. So Mary Magdalene had been moved up from a memorial to a feast. I was checking through the liturgical calendar a little bit and just to see what a big deal that is. Saints like St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Therese of Lisieux, towering saints, they have memorials. Feasts typically reserved for apostles and up, and of course the Blessed Mother. So for Mary Magdalene to be elevated to the rank of a feast, a big, big deal. She's up there with the apostles. Of course, she was the apostle to the apostles, sent from the tomb, the first one to encounter in his risen flesh, Jesus Christ resurrected. And she was sent forth with that message. So here we have a feast on Friday, Mary Magdalene, and a feast of St. James, Apostle, today. St. James, of course, brother of John, both of them sons of Zebedee. Now, St. James was the first apostle to be martyred, killed by Herod, it says, I think, in Acts chapter 12. Does not spend a lot of time in Acts chapter 12 talking about his death. But you would think, apostle, foundation stone of the church, one of Jesus' inner circle, martyr, that there would be a more flattering gospel reading that would be chosen for today's feast day of St. James the Apostle. But no, Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 28, today's gospel reading tells the story of James and John's mother. The mother of the sons of Zebedee approached Jesus with her sons and did him homage, wishing to ask him for something. He said to her, "What do you wish?" She answered him, "Command that these two sons of mine sit, one at your right and the other at your left, in your kingdom." Jesus said in reply, "You do not know what you're asking. Can you drink the chalice that I'm going to drink?" Now, St. James is a saint. He's praying for us. I would assume St. James perhaps is aware of the gospel reading chosen, at least in English-speaking parishes today, from Matthew 20. Maybe he's saying something like, "Really? Really? This is the passage? Can we just be done with this already? Yes, my mother. Yes, she embarrassed me." Though, and I think in a couple of the other gospels, the account is never her mother asking the question. They themselves, James and John, arguing among themselves on the way. Who's going to sit at Jesus' right hand and who's going to sit at his left hand when he comes into your kingdom? They have, and as Jesus said, "You have no idea what you were asking. I remember playing this game years ago when I was a youth minister. It was a matching game where you had to pick a biblical story and pick the movie title at the time that would best suit that particular biblical story. You know, so like, for example, the story of Zacchaeus, there was a movie out at the time called Get Shorty that would fit because Zacchaeus was short. That's why I had to climb the sycamore tree, right? And I remember saying, I think I put this passage and the movie I signed with it, go back in the day a little bit, a little Alicia Silverstone flick, Clueless. If you were to title James and John in this passage, it would be Clueless. So James, you know, again, great martyr of the church, bishop, foundation stone, as St. Paul talks about in his letter to the Ephesians, you would think he would deserve a better passage than this. Now, we'll get into it in the second hour because the first reading sort of helps us see how that reading of the gospel is actually pretty appropriate and actually maybe a little bit embarrassing but come on. Nobody in heaven is embarrassed anymore. That's the beautiful thing about being in heaven. All that narcissism, all that self-protection has been so thoroughly expunged and excised away that we can simply be secure in the fact that we've been saved by the grace of God alone. So I'm sure St. James can laugh about it now. We'll get into it in the second hour. Jesus, of course, says, "My chalice you will indeed drink." Little did they know what that chalice would mean for St. James. As I said, death at the hands of Herod by the sword. We'll be back with a question of the day on the other side of the break here on Breadbox Media. You're listening to The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
A few minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, July 25th. As I said, the feast day of St. James, son of Zebedee, brother of St. John, first apostle to be martyred, apostle and martyr, St. James, pray for us. We're here on Breadbox Media. If you want to learn more about Breadbox Media, this digital enterprise that seeks across the digital stratosphere through online streaming, through apps for your digital device, through podcasting, to share the good news of Jesus Christ and his love, the one who is the Lord and King of the universe, the central reality that holds all things together, the ground of our hope, and the beauty and the richness of the faith he founded upon St. Peter and the apostles like St. James. We try to do it 24/7 with programming around the clock and from coast to coast in the Northeast, the Southeast, the Northwest, the Southwest, and all points in between. We are the personalities of Breadbox Media. You can check out the different shows at breadboxmedia.com. And as I said, find podcasts of your favorite programs through Podbean, through iTunes, or through Google Play. You can also become a friend of your favorite show and receive exclusive online content. Check that out at breadboxmedia.com as well. Just click on the friend of the show link. My question of the day has to do with foods that remind us of our parents. As I said, I had the opportunity to go spend a weekend with my mother and her husband this weekend down in McCormick, South Carolina, and wasn't a long visit, you know, Friday to Sunday, so I didn't get to enjoy all the foods that I associate with my mother, of which are many. I mean, I grew up with a mom who was a great cook. And, of course, I'm blessed to be married to a woman who is a great cook, so that's good. And I'm, to be honest with you, I'm not a bad cook myself, not to brag. But my mom, outstanding. And there are many dishes that I associate with my mother growing up. But one in particular that she served up Saturday night, some of her just classic potato salad. It's really, it is as good a potato salad as you will ever have. And you just big slices of hard-boiled egg in it. Oh, took me back. Yeah, my mom, we grew up in the day when it was comfort food. Lots of comfort food. Lots of stuff cooked with bacon grease and all the rest. The good stuff. So that's one food I would say that I associate with my mom. So that's my question. What food or foods do you associate with your mother and or father? If you want to call or text, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you could post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. I guess an interesting converse question to ask would be, what food, if you have children, what food will they associate with you one day, or do they associate with you now? Of course, we could also ask the question about grandparents. It's amazing. I was thinking this week, if for some reason, my mother's mother, anytime I take a bite of cantaloupe, I feel like I'm transported back to my mother's mother. I call her Mimi, to my Mimi's kitchen. Because for some reason, it was my imagination anyway. She ate a lot of cantaloupe. Anyway, here are some of the responses we've gotten on Facebook, which is an option too, besides email, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or the calling text. Just go to Mike Allen Show on Twitter or Facebook. Bill says, chicken and noodles, lasagna, graham crackers, and chocolate icing. White Castle. Now I'm going to go out on a limb, Bill, and say White Castle was something you associate with your father. Though I'm sure there's some women out there who take exception, who enjoy a good sack of sliders. Let's see. Mark says, for my mom, hash brown casserole. Better than Cracker Barrel. Ooh, that's saying something. For my dad, smoked meats, especially brisket, chicken, and ribs. He loves his smoker. Bill also says, Spam. Oh, man. Yeah, that's, I don't know. Maybe my kids, not sure that they'll ever enjoy Braunschweiger, but they'll always probably associate me with it. Let's see. AJ says, does beer count? Well, of course. Major food group. Norman says, chicken and dumplings. Yeah, my 11-year-old will certainly always associate my wife, her mom, with chicken and dumplings because that is by far her favorite dish. Let's see. Kevin says, Deacon Kevin, actually, fried fish and grits. Mmm. And last one I'll share, then we'll get back to this later. But Sarah says, from her mother, roast, Breyers ice cream, Charlie's chips, and health foods from the health food store. And her dad, cornbread crumbled into a glass of milk, sardines on crackers, and shredded wheat, the big whole ones. Weird or what, she says. Now, Sarah, we're not here to judge, as far as you know. 573-4BREAD-4, like I said, call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Not a lot of sports going on over the weekend. They did have the Hall of Fame inductions there at Cooperstown. I'm not sure. I know that the two most prominent ones, Mike Piazza and the kid, Ken Griffey Jr., though I guess technically he's really not Ken Griffey Jr. I think he has a different name, middle name or something like that, than his dad. But he was always called Junior, so we'll call him that as well. And as a longtime Cincinnati Reds fan, I have a certain partiality to Junior, of course, because now this is when you know you're old, right? Because I can remember, now granted I was a kid, but I can remember going to a Cincinnati Reds game sometime in the late 70s. And I think it was a doubleheader or something like that. And between games, it was either a doubleheader. They did this before the one game. I can't remember. There was they played a game of fathers versus sons. So you had the Reds players who had sons, and their sons playing against them, or they may have been all mixed together. I can't remember how it was, but it was really cute. And of course, one of the boys playing on the Suns team was Ken Griffey Jr., who was probably about 8 at the time. So you know you're getting old, right, when somebody you watched play as a little kid running around the bases with the grown-ups is now being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And you got to be 5 years post-retirement to even come up for the Hall of Fame vote. So congratulations to Ken Griffey Jr., who evidently was quite emotional in his speech. Both players, I think, Piazza, one of the great catchers, maybe the greatest hitting catcher of all time, Piazza and Griffey both talking about the impact of their father in their life. In fact, Griffey Jr. talking of his father, Ken Griffey Sr., of course, a stalwart with the great Reds teams, and then, of course, he got to play with his dad with the Mariners. They even hit back-to-back home runs in one game. But Griffey talked of his father's decision to give up his football career to pursue baseball as a 29th round draft pick by Cincinnati. Griffey, of course, went on to become senior, went on to become an all-star and a key member of those great Reds teams. According to Junior, he said, quote, he made a decision to play baseball to provide for his family because that's what men do. And I love you for it. In baseball, there's certain things you can call someone, a fossil, graybeard, grandpa, dad, pops. But I got a chance to say it and mean it. And one of the great, I think, moments in his induction speech was at the end of it. He turned his hat around backwards, which was his trademark. He was sometimes criticized, you know, because of his temperament, personality. People thought he wasn't always a passionate player. But, you know, I think that's such a caricature and such a straw man, honestly, because, you know, people have different temperaments in the way they approach the game. It's pretty hard to argue for a guy who never had a whiff of scandal associated with him in terms of performance-enhancing drugs, but the guy to have the career that he had. Certainly injuries make you think what could have been, but Ken Griffey Jr., one of the all-time greats. And then Mike Piazza, evidently with a quote yesterday in his acceptance speech, talking about Jesus himself. He actually quoted Jesus, I'm trying to find this quote here, because really pretty special, where he talks about his days with the Mets around the time of 9/11. Which, you know, of course, left a big imprint on him. And he, of course, got the Mets into the World Series against the Yankees. And the most home runs, I think, of any player behind the plate in history. Sorry, I'm trying to struggle to find this right here. He certainly somebody, I saw a video a number of years ago about devout Catholic baseball players, athletes, and he was one of them profiled, somebody who really his faith became more important to him as the years went by. Anyway, here we go. Piazza, a Catholic, then added, this was in his speech, Jesus said there's no greater love than to lay down his life for his friends. I consider it a privilege to have witnessed that love. Your families and those left behind are always in my prayers. I pray we never forget their sacrifice and work to always defeat such evil. I got to go to Cooperstown one of these days. Definitely on my bucket list. All right, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking awards of the day. We'll at least get a couple in maybe here. Well, one before the break anyway. I get to rambling on sports. It's hard to shut me up. Our first nominee is going to be Go Dumb or Go Home, a Long Island woman caught driving in the carpool lane. You know, they have these special, more expedited lanes, but the problem is you've got to have more person in the vehicle. It's only for carpoolers. And this is not the first time we've mentioned this. This is another occasion, though, of Candace Breen Warren being pulled over with a pillow wrapped in a shirt with a baseball cap on top that was her passenger, faking the HOV lane there in New York with her fake carpool passenger. Really? Anyway, we'll get back to this on the other side of the break. We got a couple more choice ones. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on this Monday, July 25th, feast day of St. James the Apostle. St. James, son of Zebedee, part of Jesus' inner circle, first apostle martyred for the faith. St. James, pray for us. We'll talk a little in the second hour about how the gospel reading for today should give us a little hope on our own journey toward sainthood. We'll also talk with Ann Maloney next hour. Ann Maloney, who is a professor at St. Kate's University, St. Catherine's in St. Paul, Minnesota, with an interesting article about what to do when you recognize that the cultural crisis that we're in terms of the forsaking, abandoning, I guess, of some societally accepted moral values, how the erosion is not just happening outside our little enclave of a home, but they're happening even in our own homes. And she makes the analogy of the old suspense film, When a Stranger Calls, the intruder is inside the house. What do we do? How do we live? My conversation with Ann Maloney in the second hour. Again, my question of the day, is there a food that you associate with your mother or your father? I mean, it may be something delicious. It may be something not so much. Love to hear from you on that. As I said, had the opportunity this weekend to spend a weekend with my mom and with her husband. Great time down in McCormick, South Carolina, which is about 30 minutes from Augusta, Georgia, right on the border of South Carolina and Georgia, and got to eat some of my mom's classic potato salad that I grew up loving. So some of the responses we've gotten on Facebook, which is an option. You can also call or text 573-4BREAD-4 or email me mikeallenshow@gmail.com or go to the social media route, Facebook or Twitter. Barbara says, mastaccioli. That must be some Italian dish. I don't even know. Yum. Let's see. Mike says spaghetti. We had spaghetti for dinner every Tuesday. And you do kind of fall into that as family, don't you? You tend to recycle the same meals. It's a good spaghetti, which I don't know that I've ever had bad spaghetti, but was a good memory for Mike, obviously. Lisa says Mexican. Naomi says for her dad, chicken and rivets. Now, I'm assuming rivets are not those, you know, metal things that are used in blue jeans, right? Must be some sort of a special national dish. My dad, chicken and rivets. My mom, satay and peanut sauce with rice. Mark also says spaghetti. Kim says, father, cashews. Huh. Mother, chicken pot pie. She's from the north, so that means a homemade noodle dish. Huh. Susan says beans and cornbread with a slice of onion. Ooh. Now you're getting hungry. And then Kathy says Vienna sausages. Oh, yeah. That's a big dad thing. Vienna sausage on a cracker. My dad used to eat that. Anyway, we'll share a few more. I'll throw Leo's in here. Leo, of course, the general manager here at Redbox Media. Leo says, really extra well-done burgers that resembled Kingsford briquettes and tasted roughly the same. Frequent meal served on white bread, the only saving grace. Now, I hope, Leo, on that white bread with that charred meat, you had a little mayo or Miracle Whip because, you know, otherwise you better be drinking copious amounts of liquid to wash that stuff down. Some good mayo on white bread. Gosh, the meat's almost, you know, the meat's almost a superfluous at that point. So anyway, hope you enjoyed that. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You call or text or email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Okay, back to our What Were You Thinking nominees for the day. By the way, it gets better with this woman who was my first nominee. Spanning the globe, of course, to find dumb things that we do and to be thankful. In these occasions, it wasn't us. This woman who had a fake passenger in the carpool lane, a pillow covered with a jacket with a cap, ball cap on. I guess the highway patrol officer grew suspicious of her passenger. Now, to top it all off, upon further inspection, after she was pulled over, it was also discovered that her Subaru Outback was both unregistered and not inspected, police said. Again, if you are wanting to go incognito with an uninspected, unregistered car, don't do something to draw attention to yourself. Please. Anyway, what can I do with you people? My second nominee has to do with evidently there was a state reporter or a State Department reporter at a very important press conference here in the U.S. with Kirby. It's coming up slowly here. We're getting back into Pokemon Go, which is now reaching even into our diplomatic. Here we go. As the story says, this is from the Guardian. I guess it took a British source to report on our American idiocy. It says, well, Pokemon Go has ruffled feathers everywhere from Gettysburg to Auschwitz. Really? There have people been... I got to find this out. People playing Pokemon Go at Auschwitz? Anyway, those bored by the Republican National Convention in Cleveland this week turned to the game to while away the lengthy pauses between dystopian speeches. But on Thursday, the game ventured into rarefied territory. John Kirby, the State Department spokesman, started off his regular briefing with a cheery good afternoon and a few minutes of diplomatic speak. On this day, the topic was ISIS. So he starts going through the danger and the threat of ISIS. And as the story says, what's a sensate human being to do? Faced with so many words and so little content, pull out the iPhone and hunt for some, Machokis, Pidgeots, Beedrills, and Weepinbells, of course. I guess those are Pokemon Go characters. I'm clueless. And then it says, until you're caught. Evidently, in the middle of a press conference, Kirby said to one of the reporters, you're playing the Pokemon thing right there, aren't you? The reporter answered, I'm just keeping an eye on it. Kirby continued, accelerating global efforts, enhance cooperation to counter ISIL's message, confront them in the information space, blah, blah, blah. The briefing over. Finally, Kirby turned back to the offender. Did you get one? No, the signals are not very good. He said, I'm sorry about that. So Pokemon Go now crashing our foreign policy press conferences. But the winner, again, going dumb or going home. This guy really did it. This is from the Daily Mail. Evidently a photo going around that I think is legit on social media with a picture of a boater. And it's asked to see if you can spot the flaw. This boater is driving down this body of water. Little outboard motor on the back, enjoying the beautiful day. But you can tell his boat is still attached to the trailer. The guy did not detach his boat from his trailer. And so he's driving the boat around in the water with the trailer still attached. Now that is a what were you thinking moment. I mean, boating provides those. I had my own what were you thinking moment a number of years ago. I had realized the first dream of every man, and that is to buy a boat. Of course, you know, the second dream of every man is to sell his boat. And I did both those things. It was a little cheap. I mean, I think it cost me $400. You know, basically little John fishing boat with about 6 horsepower motor on the back. Anyway, so I drove it to go launch it for the first time, the boat, and pulling it behind my Dodge Spirit sedan, to which I'd had a trailer hitch attached. Anyway, so I'm backing it down into the lake and take the boat off and realize, and then I'm going to have to go park my car, of course, with the trailer attached. And then I realize I've locked my keys in the car with the windows up and the motor running. Keep in mind, there were other people ready and waiting to launch their boats as well. It did not make for a happy scene. Fortunately, I was able to acquire a coat hanger and was able to get the door open, but I learned an important lesson that day. Let's just put it this way. Always, when you're launching your boat, always roll your windows down. Like I said, don't ask me how I know. Not a lot of history to look back on today, but let's see if I can pull it up here on this day, July 25th, going back a month, July 25th through the ages. What are some other things that happened in history on this day? 1593, Francis King Henry IV converted from Protestantism to Roman Catholicism. There we go. You know, the whole history of the religious wars in France, very interesting. And it's speculated that Henry IV converted for political reasons. Imagine that. But he did provide much greater religious freedoms, I guess, to the Huguenots and others, the other Protestants. By the way, when I was in South Carolina this weekend, went to a cemetery, an old Huguenot cemetery. The Huguenots were what the French Protestants were called, who came over and settled back in the mid-1700s over in South Carolina. In 1978, the first baby conceived by in vitro fertilization was born in Oldham, England. How ironic that that would happen on the 10th anniversary of the release, 1968, Pope Paul VI's letter Humanae Vitae on human life. Of course, Paul VI, who, in a surprise move to some, upheld the consistent Christian teaching since the beginning of the church that contraception by its very nature is destructive to married life and distorts the meaning of the sexual union, and lots of things flow from that. The separation of procreation from the sexual act leads to things like in vitro. Now again, well, we'll get into this on the other side of the break. Got to be really careful in talking about that topic. We'll be back in just a minute with more. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media, this digital enterprise seeking to bring the truth and the love of Jesus Christ and the beauty and the richness of the faith he founded upon St. Peter and the apostles across the digital airwaves, to know that we're all on this journey together and to see how we can help each other along the way. If you've got a comment or a question, 573-4BREAD-4 is the number to call or text, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post your thoughts on Facebook or on Twitter. I'm asking a question of the day. Is there one food that you associate with your mother or your father? Again, 573-4BREAD-4. Karen, posting on Facebook, says, Mother, red velvet cake, Kentucky jam cake. Oh, yeah, my grandmother made a killer blackberry jam cake. Homemade mac and cheese and cornbread muffins. Dad is special hamburgers, Italian spaghetti, and lettuce egg salad. Let's see. Amberly says, I have no idea why desserts, but it is what it is. Dad made a mean bananas Foster, and guests would request it. That and the to die for pralines. My mom loved carrot cake. She was diagnosed with severe celiac 10 years ago, and the gluten-free variety is just not the same. Stephanie says, my dad, master chef of the outdoor grill, best hamburgers and mashed potatoes, mom fried chicken, country style green beans. Every birthday there was a chocolate cake with chocolate icing for me. Yum. Mom cottage cheese and tomatoes, Whitney says. Ugh. No thanks. Dad, a glass of milk with cornbread in it. So we'll keep sharing those if you want to send them in. We'd love to hear from you. Anyway, as we were talking in the last segment about things that have happened in this day in history, 1968, Pope Paul VI at the time, there had been a commission after toward the end of the Second Vatican Council, because the issue, you know, there had been a lot of changes in terms of contraception with the advent of hormonal contraceptives, a.k.a. the pill, which came out in 1960, which provoked further reflection on the Catholic Church's sure and constant teaching since really the advent of the Church. All you have to do is go back and read the Didache, which is a document that predates some New Testament letters, in the Church's firm and consistent opposition to the intentional frustration of the sexual act. In other words, the sterilization of such, whether temporarily or permanently, really, I guess they didn't have the technology to do it permanently, but any sort of temporary seeking to detach openness to life from the sexual union was seen as distorting the nature of the act and as a gravely immoral thing. It really was only, and that view was shared by Christians really across the spectrum, even up until 1930, when the Church of England, and then soon after, many Protestant communions broke from that classic teaching. So there was a feeling that maybe the Catholic Church, things move more slowly, right? The Catholic Church is going to change her teaching. And with the advent of the pill, it's a little bit of a different in its mechanism. Maybe the Catholic Church would change its view. And in fact, probably sort of ginning up hopes at the end of the Second Vatican Council, the idea was made to form a birth control commission to study the issue. Therefore, it really was not touched on in great detail in the documents of the Second Vatican Council. So the so-called birth control commission came together. They made their recommendations to Pope Paul VI. According to most sources, I think, they recommended that the church change her teaching on this issue. Pope Paul VI disagreed. We would have to think, perhaps inspired by the Holy Spirit, as the promise had been that the church would not be led into error. And Pope Paul VI wrote his letter, Humanae Vitae, which was roundly criticized in some quarters of the church, even among some bishops. It is a beautiful document. It's easy read in one sitting. It is so prophetic in many ways in some of the issues we're dealing with now. And here we are in Natural Family Planning Awareness Week, which is a week sponsored by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. It always centers around this day, the feast day of St. James, the anniversary of the 1968 letter, Humanae Vitae. We'll be coming up on the 50th anniversary of that in 2018. And we'll be touching back on this theme in coming days. But one of the interesting things, 1978, 10 years later, after Humanae Vitae, after the warnings from Paul VI about what an increasing embrace of sterilized sex, basically, would bring to our culture, the first baby was conceived in a petri dish and in vitro fertilization and implanted. Now, let me just make a quick pause here so that you don't mishear me. Every child who exists in the world is a child of sacred worth and dignity, no matter how their conception came to be. And so to view in vitro fertilization as, by its very nature, an intrinsically immoral process that separates human procreation from the sexual union and tends toward a mentality in which the human person becomes a commodity does not in any way denigrate the value of any person so conceived. So if you know someone, one of your children, maybe even you yourself, were conceived via in vitro fertilization, they are a child made in the image and likeness of God and of inestimable worth. But there are troubling consequences when we separate those things out. We'll talk about it more, as I said, later in the week. Interestingly enough, 19 years after that first in vitro fertilization, on this same day, 1997, scientists announced the first human cells to be cultured in a laboratory using tissue, human stem cells to be cultured in a laboratory using tissue taken from aborted human embryos. So this tendency to commodify the human person that Aldous Huxley in his Brave New World also prophetically wrote about back in the early 30s, we can see all centered around on this feast day. Pope Paul VI, thank you for this great legacy that you've given us in Humanae Vitae. 573-4BREAD-4, if you've got a comment or question on that. Saw over the weekend the initial press event, or I guess rally, in which Tim Kaine was announced as Hillary Clinton's running mate. Of course, the Democratic National Convention taking place a week after the GOP's last week in Cleveland. The Democrats will be in Philadelphia. I will admit, now, I'm not the biggest political junkie, but I did admit, I will admit to saying who when the announcement came that it was Tim Kaine, and saw some of his some of the rally, some of the things that he said, began to read up on him a little bit. But one of the things I noted in the rally was him talking extensively about his upbringing as a Catholic, his experience in not only going to Jesuit school, but also serving in Jesuit missions. I think it was in Honduras. Of course, he's fluent in Spanish. That'll be a help, I think, to Hillary Clinton, who will already have a stranglehold, I think, on the Hispanic vote. But I was fascinated by this about Tim Kaine, and came across this interesting interview with Senator Tim Kaine from Virginia. He is, as he himself said in his in the rally, one of the few people in the history of this country to be a mayor, to be a governor, and a senator. Now, of course, he's a vice presidential candidate. But he was asked when it was determined that he was among Hillary's final candidates. Chuck Todd on Meet the Press asked Senator Tim Kaine this question. He said, this was Chuck Todd. He said, you know, when you first ran as lieutenant governor, you were classified as a pro-life Democrat. You're now not considered a pro-life Democrat. How would you describe your abortion position? Again, a self-professed Catholic, a practicing Catholic, somebody who claims that his Catholicism shapes his understanding of social justice, for example. Seems like a nice enough guy in that regard. Once classified as a pro-life Democrat, now not so much. Here's what Kaine said, this on Meet the Press. You know, I would say people use labels all the time, but I'm kind of a traditional Catholic. I don't like it personally. I'm opposed to abortion, and personally, I'm opposed to the death penalty. We have shadows here of the famous statement from Mario Cuomo back in the day. Mario Cuomo, who said that even though this was in a speech he gave at Notre Dame, that even though he's personally opposed to abortion, he would not consider a law against abortion. He would not impose his view. And this has become sort of the standard cover for politicians who are Catholic, who can somehow excuse this. Let's hear how Kaine does the gymnastics here. Chuck Todd says, are there regulations that should be on abortion? Kaine says, let me continue. I deeply believe, and not just as a matter of politics, but even as a matter of morality, that matters about reproduction and intimacy and relationships and contraception are in the personal realm. They're moral decisions for individuals to make for themselves. And the last thing we need is government intruding into these personal decisions. So I've taken a position which is quite common among Catholics. Unfortunately, about that, Kaine is right. He said, I've got a personal feeling about abortion, but the right role for government is to let women make their own decisions. So, for example, you know, Monday, the Supreme Court is likely to decide a really important case about abortion rights. And he goes on from there. We'll have to get into this in the other side of the break a little bit. I want to talk about Tim Kaine. I also want to talk about Mike Pence, not so much politically Pence, but his own faith journey. And why it didn't have to be that way. But Tim Kaine, the shadow of Mario Cuomo. That's sad. Sorry, Senator, you've, I think, sold your political soul on that issue. We'll be back with more second hour. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.